Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist interviews. I want to thank all of our listeners who are here in the audience of the War Memorial Opera House in San Francisco, as well as those who will be listening online at a later date. We are here this evening on Saturday, February 24th, 2007, and as many of you may know at this point, we are taking select Meet the Artist interviews and recording them for podcast. And this particular interview will be available sometime in the coming week. And you can review other podcasts as well as learn more about our outreach education programs, more about San Francisco Ballet, by visiting our website at sfballet.org. I am Charles McNeil, Director of Education for San Francisco Ballet, and I'm very pleased to have as my guest this evening Principal Conductor and Music Director for San Francisco Ballet, Mr. Martin West.
Good evening.
Mr. West is acknowledged as one of the foremost conductors of ballet in the world. He serves as Music Director and Principal Conductor of San Francisco Ballet, as I said, and he actually acts as Principal Conductor for the English National Ballet as well. He divides his time between those two companies, as well as the London Concert Orchestra and the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra, as I understand it. So, Mr. West, let's start out by telling me a little bit about what you do in your role as music director and principal conductor. We kind of know what the conductor does. What does a music director do?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's two different facets to the job. The conductor, you can all see me tonight conducting for the show. Maybe talk about that later. Okay. The music director is more of a, it's sort of an administration role, but it's more of a way of making sure everything that needs to be done musically is organized. And I have a team of people, Tom Rose, the orchestral personnel manager, and my librarian, Matt Norton, make sure the music's on the stands and we have enough players in the orchestra. And of course, I'm in charge of the pianists, who play for rehearsals every day and for the class. And actually now I've started taking on the role of looking at the pianists in the school as well, so it's kind of a big umbrella. Anything to do with music, I have a say in.
Okay, wow, that's a large... Tell us a little bit about your training, a little bit about your background, which is quite extensive.
I don't know if you can tell, but I'm not from America. I'm actually...
We can tell.
I'm actually from England. I first played an instrument, to my knowledge, when I was four. I started the piano when I was four, and I even played in an orchestra when I was four, when my mum, who is a teacher of music, peripatetic teacher of music, was running a youth orchestra and helping to run a youth orchestra. And one day she couldn't find a babysitter for me, so I had no choice, but I had to go and sit in the orchestra and play triangle. So that's when I first started playing in orchestras.
Is that true?
That's actually true, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I thought I was five, but Mum tells me I was four, so that's how I started playing in orchestras. And then I started playing the cello when I was six, or seven, I think, and I've played in orchestras all my life. That was basically my training. We had a very good local youth orchestra, and I played in that. And when I was 15, I joined the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain as a member of the section. And we played some fantastic concerts in amazing places with great conductors, Pierre Boulez and Simon Rattle, people like that. Really world great conductors. And I was just enthused by the whole thing.
Wow. Well, I can imagine that you've trained as a classical musician, but how do you train to become a conductor specifically?
That's another good question. There is no way of training, actually, in a way. You just have to find a group of people who are willing to play for you. And so
you walk around looking for musicians?
Well, I went to university. I was at Cambridge University. I studied math. But I always wanted to be a musician. I mean, I think I wanted to be a musician. I wanted to be able to conduct. And I used to ask all my friends if they would play. And so I think the beginning of my second year, I organized a concert and I did no work for a whole semester. And we did Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony, and I got about 80 players to play for me, and it was a huge success. And so I started conducting at university, basically.
Wow.
And after that, I went to music college and actually did it a bit more thoroughly and
did
properly.
Do you get to specialize in conducting at music college?
I did. I went to the Royal Academy of Music. First of all, I went as a cellist, as a postgraduate cellist, and I did 2 years solid cello practice, which was very good for me. And then I joined the conducting course for another 3 years.
Right.
So So I did a fair chunk.
Okay, I have to ask this question that I need to ask for myself, and I'm sure other people. So as the conductor, do you play every instrument in the orchestra?
No, not at all.
No.
I play the cello.
You play the cello.
That was my main instrument. I think I learned to play the... I really wanted to conduct because I used to sit right underneath the conductor's nose, so I had no one else to look at. So that's partly why I think I started thinking about conducting when I was that's about 16 when I first thought I wanted to conduct. And play the piano, like most people, you know, most conductors would. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all very lapsed. It's not very good anymore. And I dabbled, you know.
This is a total non sequitur, but, you know, there was something interesting I was reading when I was reading about the tasks of the music director. And one of the things you do, obviously, is on rare occasion audition new members of the orchestra. But there's a very unique way that happens, that you don't just, like a regular dance audition or a theater audition, invite the person into the room and watch them. And how is it done?
Well, actually, in this country, it's very different than it is in England. I'll perhaps give you both examples, because it's a very interesting way. It's very, very different. In America, we post the audition, the job, and all the major places you have to do it, and we get thousands of applicants. Actually, I think we had about 120 applicants for, say, what did we have last, a viola audition. We had about 120 applicants. And... A committee of people will look at the resumes that come in and decide if there's anybody who's really, really not worth listening to. But I think we had about 80 people come, and they come from all over the country, sometimes all over the world, and they play behind a screen for about 10 minutes if they're lucky, and we give them a set pieces to learn, and we listen to those, and we have a little voting system, you know. Like, behind the screen, and then they get sent through to the next round, and then maybe another round as well, and then eventually we come out. It's like a beauty contest, you know, and we announce them in reverse order. And in England, it's slightly different. We have the same sort of system with auditioners, but it's very strict over here. We're not allowed to talk after the audition. We have to just vote. We can't discuss it between ourselves. When in England, we just discuss, say, do we think they were good enough, you know, whatever. And then instead of choosing one person at the end of the day, we choose maybe three or four, however many we think might be good, and we invite them to play just for a few days with the orchestra. And from that, you can tell a lot from how they play in the orchestra, of course. It's a very different skill to play with people than it is just to play on your own.
Yes, I would imagine. Now, I would say that there are advantages to this American system that really... You don't have any influence of what the person looks like, or it's purely musical. I mean, do you say that's an advantage?
It's certainly an advantage in the first round. We see them in the last round. Mm. So if we don't like the look of them, we can just... No, we don't do that. It's very important, actually. I think it's all... In England, we also have it behind the screen. It's very important in the first round that you at least hear people, because there's all sorts of problems in the past, not nowadays, but... People, you know, I know them. They're really quite good. Let's put them through, and vice versa. It's important to be very fair.
Sort of eliminates the bias when you.
That's
when
right.
You do it
at least in the first rounds, it's very important to do that.
Good. And I want to say you're so good at explaining music and music theory to the uninitiated. I've heard you give different talks and things, and you do it so well.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, we're in conversation with Martin West, music director and principal conductor for San Francisco Ballet. Now, you do have a lot of outreach and education in your background, and actually there's an interesting story about Pimlico. Can you tell me about that?
Pimlico Opera is a small opera company in England, and every year... quite a long time now. The lady who runs it is a very dynamic lady, and she really believes in these sort of outreach programs. And every year, for the past maybe 10 years now, they've gone to a prison and put on a show. So what do you think? So we did West Side Story in Winchester Prison.
In the prison?
In the prison, in the gym of the prison. And all the inmates were the cast. And we got, so the sharks and the jets with all it was quite funny, I have to say. You never heard some of the songs sung like it was, but it's an It's an amazing experience. For them, some of them, you know, like in all prisons, some of the people are very hardened people, and some people just, sad, really, because they had very terrible lives, and they just want something. And this scheme that we did, I just did 1 year of it. But actually, the person who was producing it in that year was a member of the very first cast from about 5 years ago, Sweeney Todd, that they did.
Okay.
And he'd enjoyed it so much that he'd actually got out of crime. He'd got a grant from a place and gone to stage school, learnt to do stage producing, and he was in actually now being a stage producer. So, and it's an amazing thing. And the lady who runs it actually takes, every year she takes 2-3 of the inmates that she thinks she really likes,
right,
and they go and work as stagehands on her opera company in Grange Park as well. It's really fantastic. And she changes people's lives. That's what it's all about. It's nothing about giving them a good time. It's about changing people's lives.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you can never tell the influence something like that will have.
Absolutely.
And there's no training for it, is there? I mean, when you go to prison to teach opera.
No, you learn quickly on the job, though, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about San Francisco Ballet Orchestra, because it's unique. Not every ballet company has its own full permanent orchestra or conductor. So I know that San Francisco Ballets began with just 38 musicians in 1975. Can you tell us about the orchestra today? How many members are there?
Well, we have 49 core members, but we nearly always play with more, actually, because the core members are just the ones that fill the necessary roles, as it were. And then, for instance, tonight we'll have about, I think, 65 in the pit for Sleeping Beauty, because it's such a big work and you need the weight of sound. We have 8 violins, say, in the core, but we're going to have 12 tonight, just so you get value for money.
Okay. And do musicians work the same work weeks as the dancers? I mean, or do they have a longer rehearsal or
contract period?
No, we have
a much shorter period, actually. Ah. Yeah, well, we actually contracted as musicians from the same time as the ballet art at the season. So the orchestra contract runs from December the 1st to May whenever the season finishes. But whereas the dancers will typically take 3 weeks to learn a ballet.
Right.
The orchestras have maybe 1 day or maybe 1.5 days to learn.
Wow. That takes a lot of talent.
A lot of talent, a lot of dedication, a lot of practicing of parts beforehand. So although they're not actually called for that many calls, you'll find that Matt will always be dishing out music. And those of you who kind of come to the program four with Eden, if you've come backstage, you'll have heard nothing but vibraphone players practicing their parts since about the beginning of Nutcracker.
Oh, wow.
Because it's very hard, and they take it very seriously.
You know, when dancers dance in a company, they're fully supported. They get their salary, and of course they get their shoes and their costumes, and everything is provided. So do musicians have to provide their own instruments if they're damaged or replaced? I mean, does the ballet subsidize it?
They have to provide their own instrument, which is, in this country, most places. I think if you go to the Berlin Philharmonic or Leipzig, they have their own instruments that are lent out. But most orchestras, you provide your own instrument. And of course, the costs of some instruments can be astronomical. I know there are cellos in this orchestra who own cellos which are worth sort of $750,000. So it's no small matter if you're paying that on top of your mortgage. But they do get little perks. They get their instruments insured, at least.
What happens when the company's on tour?
Well, we pick up an orchestra. We get a rent an orchestra. sometimes we can get this. For instance, we went to New York and we used a New York City Opera Orchestra who happened to be free that night. That week, so and yeah,
is that fun for you or challenging to work with a completely new orchestra?
It's both. It's a bit nerve wracking. I mean, something like the City Opera Orchestra are fantastic. So that was great.
Martin, I wanted to do a segue into Sleeping Beauty, and this is a dance to a composition by Tchaikovsky. Can you tell me, does this ballet pose any particular challenges? Is it fun? Is it difficult? Tell me about your role with conducting this ballet.
Okay, this is a great ballet for anybody who wants to learn how to conduct for ballet, because it's, I think, probably the hardest one.
Actually. Really?
Yeah. All the classical ballets are the hardest thing for the conductor, because classical steps are so specific as to what they require, and each dancer has their own specific way of dancing them. And so it's no just question of saying, oh, it's fast, it's this speed, whatever, which often you can do with some of the more modern ballets. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, tonight you'll see there's six fairies. So they each have a solo, and there'll be about four casts of that over the next 2 weeks. And then there's Aurora, there's four casts of Aurora, there's a prince, there's all sorts of people all having their solos. And in the last act, of course, is the pas de six, and there's all different dancers. And they all have their own little requirements. And it's not just quite, you can't possibly learn the speed. You can't do that. So you have to be able to watch and understand right. what's going on stage.
So do you memorize the dance steps?
No. Although,
I mean, I know you don't dance them. But
well, you'd be surprised. You'd see me behind the curtain before. The dancers are always having fun at me because I always demonstrate things in my own inimitable way. But, no, I don't learn the dance steps as such, but I learn. It's difficult to say. I do sort of memorize them in a way. I do know what they're doing, so I can say to them, you know, that's his own step. You know, by the way, you know, you rushed in it. So I kind of learned the rhythm of a step. I couldn't tell you, you know, it was five, say so, blah, 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 you know.
But the principal movements, you certainly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So who drives the music? Does the music drive the dancer, or does the dancer drive the music? Or does it go back and forth?
Back and forth, all the time. It's like the only way I can explain it to people, I've tried two ways, actually. One is, it's a bit like conducting a concerto. If you're having a violin soloist, and if sometimes they're in charge and they want to go a bit slower, they go a bit slower, and the orchestra has to follow. And other times, the orchestra's really the more important role, and the violinist has to just do the thing, and that's what happens in ballet all the time. So it's like who's on charge on the road. You know, you want to go your speed, but if there's a car in front of you just going a little bit slower, you don't go that speed, you know, else you'll crash into them. So you just got to be wary of what's going on all the time.
Tell me something that you want to share with the audience to help them get a better understanding of the complexity and sophistication of this particular score.
Beauty is, I think, is probably the most perfect ballet score of all time. Tchaikovsky wrote it very close to the end of his life when he was about 50. And this is the second ballet he wrote after Swan Lake. And he'd got a lot more experience as a composer of symphonies. And if anybody knows the Fifth Symphony, for instance, it's a lot of similarities between this score and the Fifth Symphony, which was written more or less the same sort of time. So the ballet, for me, breaks up into two kind of distinct bits. There's there's a symphonic music, which you'll hear in the overture, you'll hear at the end of the prologue when Carabos is doing all that bit. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly well written, incredibly symphonic, two leitmotifs that are interwoven and come out all the time. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other bits where there's classical ballet, where everything kind of stops and we have a few variations. So there's, for me, it's two, I have to have two different things in my mind all the time. So as soon as the variations start, I'm into classical ballet mode and really watching and making sure I'm doing my best for the dancers.
Well, we look forward to that. So we have time for a couple of questions from the audience for conductor Martin West. Yes. So the question is, sometimes changes, adaptations, and edits are made to scores. Are you intimately involved in that process?
Kind of, yes. Helgi will come with an idea. For this production, it's an old production, so everything was basically decided before I came here, although there's been one or two changes this time, just to fit some new ideas of Helgi. So I am, Helgi wouldn't make a cut without running it by me first. And it's my job to make sure that Helgi's vision is sort of worked out, but then, of course, my other hat is to make sure that Tchaikovsky's vision is seen out as
right.
well.
It's got to make sense musically.
We mustn't forget that what we hear is Sleeping Beauty actually is already cut almost to oblivion. Not quite. But I don't think anybody's ever done a full-length version of what Tchaikovsky wrote, because even the very first production was already cut by what's called Drigo, and with Tchaikovsky's permission, because it was too long. Even in those days, things were being adapted to... but there's no extra music in this one.
Tell us, what drew you to working, to wanting to work with ballet companies as opposed to work for a symphonic orchestra?
The embarrassing answer is money. actually, not even money, because anybody knows that ballet conductors don't earn as much as symphonic conductors.
Right.
No, the reason I joined the ballet company was because I left the Royal Academy of Music in 1995 and spent a good year unemployed, like all great conductors do at the beginning of their career.
And dancers.
And dancers, yeah. And... I discovered an advert in the paper, Saturday paper, for an assistant conductor at English National Ballet. And so I thought, well, yeah, let's go for that. Luckily, I had no idea how hard ballet was, or else I would never have applied. And by hook or by crook, actually, I eventually ended up getting the job. I didn't get it to begin with, but I got it within a year. And I the first time I conducted Swan Lake with them as my audition, without rehearsal, by the way, that's how they work there, I'd seen two ballets in my life.
Before going to the English National?
Yeah, I'm ashamed to admit. Because we didn't have ballet in Bolton, you know, so...
Bolton, England.
That is, yeah.
Yes. Okay. We talked about the music fitting the steps versus the steps fitting the music. Which is right, Martin?
No, well, I think... I take your point. The thing is, the choreographer makes the steps to fit the music. But when the dancer dances them, they have to... What I'd like is to see a dancer who is hearing the music in the steps that they're dancing. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not just a question of dancing to the music. It's a collaboration. So they dance, and you should be able to hear the music in their steps. So that's what I mean by making the music in their steps.
I would also suspect there's a great difference between a score being created specifically commissioned for a dance and that interchange between the choreographer and the composer versus when we take a symphonic piece and adapt it.
Absolutely. Especially, of course, the more tradition you have in a piece, the more liable things are to be changed. And something like Sleeping Beauty, which is nearly 120 years old, has had a lot of time for people to have their own ideas and change.
We have time for one last question. How would you rate the acoustics in the San Francisco War Memorial Opera House?
It's a very good question, and it depends where you sit. If from where I am, just here, it's great, actually. It's not the best pit in the world because it's very long and quite narrow. And so the orchestra, the people at the back, the basses, can't really hear what's going on in the percussion. So in that sense, it's difficult, but it is quite generous acoustic where we are here. And if you're up in the grand tier, and even at the top, it sounds wonderful. And sometimes I've sat in the orchestra, and various places, certain instruments are deadened out. It's very interesting. And that happens at every opera house. It's impossible. In a big space like this, you always get reflections off walls and stuff like that. But generally, it's a great acoustic. It's because it's natural.
Right. Well, you know, I could go on talking with you for a while longer, but we've come to the end of our time today, and I want to thank you so much for being our guest this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Martin West.
Thank you.
Please keep in mind that selected Meet the Artist interviews, as well as other programs, are now podcast on our website, and you can get more information by going to sfballet.org.